Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:05 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is March 31st, and it's the last day of the quarter. So we've got a bit of volatility, and there's certainly some profit taking and a bit of rotation. So perhaps it's not the best day to draw strong conclusions. But one thing for sure is that Home Depot is back on its lows, and this has been an extraordinarily big decline relative to the wider market, and it's against a background where the share had rallied very impressively from its March 2021 lows. So we've seen also that home builders haven't been doing especially well either, but home builders are holding up better than Home Depot is, but also still pulling back. So even though Home Depot has probably pulled back more, we have generally a pretty similar pattern overall. Well, one might think that the big move upwards in yields has got something to do with that. We've seen this very big advance in 10-year treasuries over the course of the last quarter, but it is starting to moderate, but not in an especially dynamic manner. So this doesn't really look like much more than a pause. Now, I think when we think about just how oversold bond prices are, then it's reasonable to anticipate we should get at least a reversionary rally, or potentially, if not a full reversion back to the 200-day moving average, at least back into the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range. But that's still a good 3 to 4 point move. The reality is that mortgage rates are heading higher, and that's going to have an effect on consumer sentiment, because one thing that people do tend to take to heart is when they see a home that they'd like to buy and they suddenly think that they could possibly afford it, and then they find out what the monthly payment would be on that mortgage, and it's substantially higher than what it would have been a couple of months ago. Well, I bought a house in May of last year, and we were able to get 3% on a jumbo loan. And now that interest rate's 50% higher. So this has been a really profound change, and it's going to cut into demand for homes and potentially the success of achieving the prices that people want to get for their homes. We're back in the region of the levels that mortgages were in 2013 through to about 2018, at least the upper side of that range. But prices are substantially higher today than they were then. So we've had a really big move in the kinds of things that people actually spend money on. And of course, the other big determinant there is oil. So the Biden administration said that they're going to release an additional million barrels a day from the strategic reserve. Now they've got, it did beg the question, how much have they got in there? And it's a lot. It's in excess of 500 million barrels, so they could continue doing this for a while. But the reality is that we're still in a tight environment overall. And this additional million barrels a day will certainly help to even out the supply-demand balance. But releases from the strategic reserve are generally considered to be short-term in nature. The only real way to rebalance the market on a sustainable basis would be to do so by increasing organic supply. And companies are still pretty reluctant to do that, because they've been chastised for a decade about spending too much money. And now that they are adopting more fiscally responsible ways of dealing with exploration and development, they're being chastised for not spending enough. So it's perhaps not all that surprising that companies are deciding to just look after their shareholders. But Exxon has also been dabbling in cryptocurrencies. Now, they're still paying their dividend, and they currently yield around 4%. So that's way down from where it was at in the teeth of the pandemic in March, April of 2020, and the share prices back in the region of where it was in 2016 and 17. It's quite likely to consolidate further if we see oil prices continuing to trade downwards. Exxon is starting to mine Bitcoin from gas, or using gas that it would normally flare. So that does, I think, spark the imaginations of people that are interested in cryptocurrencies. But Bitcoin today was down $1,600. So it got up to test the region of the 200-day moving average, and now it's encountering resistance, and it has a short-term overbought condition. It has also broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So it's perhaps reasonable to anticipate we might get a little consolidation, but it would really need to now sustain a move below the 40,000 level to confirm more than that. So it's a choppy price trend overall. Even when we look at this on a log scale chart, which would smooth out some of the peaks and troughs, there's been a very volatile range going on for the last 18 months. And it's really for the bulls to prove that the price can continue to hold this break back above the 40,000 level. Now, that 1,000-day moving average has been an area of resistance, or excuse me, support on multiple occasions in the past. And it's risen now to almost 21,000. When I first started talking about the potential for a reversion back to the 1,000-day moving average almost a year ago, well, it was a lot closer to 10,000. So just by going sideways, it's unwound a lot of the overbought condition relative to that big trend mean. And I continue to think that it is more likely than not that at some stage it's going to revert to the mean fully. And that will probably be the next really attractive entry opportunity for Bitcoin. We're also seeing more speculation about the potential for some additional downside. The Nasdaq was down a couple of hundred points in here today, pulling back from that 15,000 level and the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, it's also worth reminding ourselves that Bitcoin tends to be the lightning rod for liquidity. So when Bitcoin does well, it's generally signaling a benign outcome for stocks. And when Bitcoin pulls back sharply, well, it's suggesting that we might be in for some additional volatility in stock markets, which is exactly what's happening right now. And the proximate reason for this pullback is the pressure that's coming to bear once more on the U.S.-listed portion of the Chinese market. Baidu today was added to the SEC's list of companies that could be delisted. And it's hard to imagine how they're going to resolve this question. I think it's quite unlikely that China is going to agree to allow U.S. regulators access to the books and audit records of Chinese companies. They would view that as an interference in how they govern their own country. They might also think of it as impeding national security because of the kind of details it would make available with regard to consumers and consumer spending and the health of the economy in China. And then, of course, there's the reality that companies in China, they are managed to a different standard than we might be accustomed to in better governed areas. And then, of course, there's the additional political risk. And political risk isn't something that markets are really attuned to dealing with. And there is no audit report is going to give you an accurate depiction of what that risk involves. So there is obviously limited utility for accessing auditor reports in China, and yet that is what's being demanded. So obviously investors should know, or at least, and of course they've been ignoring the fact, but they should know that investing in China comes with additional risks, just like any other emerging market. Well, Baidu is pulling back sharply in here today. Alibaba was also in negative territory. There's certainly speculation that we're going to see some of these companies having to delist from the USA and then potentially relist in Hong Kong. That should be a reasonably benign outcome for Hong Kong. The H-share index was also in negative territory today, though, and it's unwound some of the short-term oversold condition. And it's coming back into the region of this. Sorry, this is a. Just put this in local currency. It's coming back into the 8,000 region and the lower side of the overhead trading range. If this is a meaningful low, then it will hold during any period of consolidation. But it does look increasingly likely that we're moving into that period of consolidation. And against a background where stocks are beginning to ease, gold prices have been reasonably steady. Gold continues to pause here above the $1,900 area. Copper prices were also quite steady in here today, although in mildly negative territory. When we think about what's going on in the Ukraine, I thought that the news story that was quoted by John Authors today from Bret Stephens from the New York Times made some excellent points about the rationale for Russia's invasion of Ukraine being more about securing energy assets and forestalling the potential that Ukraine could become a competitor in terms of natural gas exports to Russia, or a competitor of Russia's in natural gas exports. That's probably the base case for why Russia made these decisions. Because Russia obviously wants to be an exporter of fossil fuels indefinitely. They know that there's going to be a competition for market share because there are plenty of producers and there are efforts underway globally to try and reduce the necessity to use fossil fuels. I don't think anyone's really under the illusion that we're going to suddenly stop using them. But what we do know is that Russia's biggest clients, namely the EU, has been using less fossil fuel. Now they've become progressively more dependent on Russia, but the intensity of fossil fuel in terms of economic growth and per capita usage because of efficiency gains certainly has been declining. So what this entire war might easily be characterized as is a drive towards achieving market share and substituting reliance on European purchases for growth markets in Asia. And the Urals medium or the spread of the Urals medium crude to Brent is now sitting at about $29. So this has been a really quite profound change. But the reality is that Saudi Arabia's oil is trading at a mild premium to Brent. So if Russia wants to sell, they could offer long-term contracts, and even if they were to agree to a $10 discount to Brent, well, then that would still be a really significant coup from Russia's perspective, because they would secure long-term contracts with growth markets. Of course, there's going to be a much greater emphasis on attempting to reduce reliance on imported energy. It's no longer just about the climate, it's about energy security. So the solar ETF is now right in the region of the 200-day moving average and the lower side of the overhead trading range, and it looks susceptible to at least some consolidation in this area. And it's the same type of story with the wind sector, and also testing the lower side of the overhead trading range. When we think about inflationary measures in Europe, well, the ECB only has one stated official mandate, which is to control inflation. And the Eurostoxx index got all the way back to test the 200-day moving average. So this has been a really impressive rebound over the course of this month. But now we're starting to see some consolidation. So I think it is quite likely that we're going to see some consolidation. The sectors that find support above their lows and then subsequently push on to new recovery highs, so they would then put in a higher low and a higher high, well, they will probably be the best candidates for recovery and to lead us out of this correction. Then, of course, there will be others that move into lengthy ranging phases. And it really does depend on what happens with bond yields. The IPO ETF got up to test the region of the 1,000-day moving average and has pulled back this week, so it does look likely that we're going to see additional testing of the lows and potentially quite lengthy ranges. The ARK Innovation ETF has rallied really very impressively, but also then pulled back in here today. When we think then about what are the kinds of sectors that do best in this environment, well, the Dividend Aristocrats were in negative territory today as well, but they continue to hold the $90 area. And this has been more of a ranging phase than an acute decline. Obviously, a lot of people are going to be paying attention to what happens to the major stock markets. But with downward pressure starting to come on the Nasdaq, that will likely feed through into weakness in Asia tomorrow. So the Nikkei was down 200 today and is likely to follow through on the downside tomorrow. And this is also encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. As inflationary pressures rise, particularly in the USA and Europe, it does beg the question, how interest rate sensitive are markets? How much of an interest rate hike can they tolerate? And potentially, have bond yields already priced in about as much of a tightening as markets can possibly tolerate? I've been of the view that we would get one interest rate hike, and then after that, it's going to be exceptionally difficult to raise rates. What would make it even more difficult to raise rates is a very weak stock market. So the S&P 500 was down over 1% in here today. It really does need to hold the region of the 200-day moving average if the recovery is to remain credible. If ranging is to remain credible rather than top formation completion, then it will absolutely need to hold the lows. When we look at the largest companies, Amazon had one of the more impressive rebounds and then was down a couple of percent in here today. So it does look like we are now on the cusp of some pressuring for central banks. Central banks are unlikely to veer away from raising rates until there's a weaker stock market, which would imply a weaker consumer market. And the market may be on the cusp of delivering that weakness in order to forestall the determination to raise rates. Perhaps the only country, or at least the only major country that has aggressively raised rates, is Brazil. And they've raised rates by over 10% in a year. And they now have positive real interest rates. The Selic rate is above the prevailing CPI rate. And the Brazilian stock market continues to rebound, and not least because of the commodity export market. If inflation does start to moderate, and it might moderate faster in Brazil than in other countries, well, that will leave them the opportunity to cut rates aggressively and reignite the consumer finance sector. One stock I thought was interesting is PagSeguro. It's the financial payments sector in Brazil, and it's really been killed off because of those higher interest rates, which have had a really significant impact on consumer demand. In the event that Brazil's inflation does in fact peak, well, then consumer demand should start to rise again. And the digital payments have been set up by the central bank, and PagSeguro has been one of the primary beneficiaries of that. So it's not like digital payments are going to disappear in Brazil. In fact, it's more likely than not going to factor into how the central bank engages in stimulus in future, because just about everybody now has their own digital wallet. So it will be, I think, perhaps one of the stocks that's worth monitoring as a barometer of just how healthy the Brazilian consumer is. But we can certainly point towards the strength of the real, and it has broken out of a 2-year base formation. So that's generally benign, that these high interest rates are likely to bring down inflation. And then we have India, and the market there is steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, it still has that sequence of major lower rally highs, and it's an expensive market on a valuation basis. But the Indian rupee has been strengthening over the last couple of weeks. So we're starting to see some support coming through in the region of the peak from, or the, well, I guess it's the dollar's peak and the rupee's low from early 2020. And if oil prices come down, that should be benign for consumers like India. And India is one of the countries that's picking up discounted oil from Russia, which should be beneficial for the economy generally. So there's certainly a lot to play for here, and there's a lot of uncertainties about how is the European economy going to react in terms of inflation and lower growth from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We're also presented with the big questions about how our economy is going to normalize after the pandemic, and when will the fear of the coronavirus fully abate? These are all, I think, very significant questions. And of course, what it really comes down to is monetary policy and what's going to happen in terms of the wider economy. The cloud computing sector did spectacularly well in 2020 through to the end of 2021, and then experienced a deep decline. We've had this really impressive rebound over the last 3 weeks, which just about closed the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. If this is support building, and this big upside weekly key put in 3 weeks ago is going to hold, well, then that region of the 1,000-day moving average has to represent the key, a secular support. It's been a point of support on multiple occasions for a decade. And there has been this almost instinctual willingness to buy the dip. But the most important thing about buying the dip is that it always works during a bull market. It's when buying the dip fails that we start to see panic starting to set in. And we're going to see, perhaps in the next week or two, just how successful that buy the dip mentality has been. Because I do think that we are at risk of at least some consolidation, and some sectors that did especially well in 2020 and 2021, well, they're not as well positioned to continue to grow at that rate in the post-pandemic era. And that's particularly true as we move into more of an inflationary environment where money is tighter and interest rates rise and availability of credit is problematic. So this is particularly true for companies like Netflix, where they have an acute need for continued availability of liquidity. And then we have companies like Zoom, where they've done really well during the pandemic and then subsequently find out that people hate using their platform. So it's likely that at least some of these companies are not going to survive. We have the significant boom in delivery apps because people couldn't go outside. But in an inflationary environment where grocery prices are rising, well, do we really need to then pay even more money to have those goods delivered when it's just easier to go to the store yourself? And you have companies like Domino's paying people to come pick up their own pizza orders. Well, that obviously then helps to highlight how expensive it is to have them delivered. So I think we're in for a bit of an all change moment here. And it's more likely than not that we're going to see at least some pause and consolidation at a minimum in markets. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.